We've already, like, we, why did we speak about our savings?
I know, we already debriefed our savers.
Before pressing play.
Do you want to give, like, a one-line summary? How was your savers?
Wait, I'm going to have to stop and answer this phone call. Okay, third time's a charm. Third time. Absolute charm.
Here we go. We're doing it.
We have already spoken off, because we're not just colleagues.
I mean,
we are acquaintances.
Yeah, as well.
And so we have discussed very politely our Seder experiences.
Yeah.
Which we should have honestly waited until. Otherwise, what content do we have? What content?
Literally, like, I think we both had, like, a pretty typical Seder experience, it sounds like. No.
Well, I don't know. Like, it's just. Like, it's like, I've never done Seder with my extended family before. Mm. Because, like, they're all Canadian.
Mm-hmm.
And we were always in Australia. And so we did it always with the same family friends. And so this was... And they're all, like... We just never went at Pesach time. We always went when it was, like, our summer. Or, like, their summer. Right? Like, we went when it was holidays.
Interesting. That makes sense.
So, yeah. Like, I... Like... And just to do Pesach with them was so weird. And it's all... Like, I think the weirdest part is, like... I know, like, my cousins are very, caveat, my cousins are very, very from, like, and, like, have gotten mm-hmm. progressively from over the years, but I just think, like, there are certain things that are at a Seder that are the same, and, like, minhagim that, like, carry over clearly from my grandparents, and just to see the ways that, like, the way those three, like, sort of family traditions have diverged, so, like, what my family does versus what, like, my uncle's families do. And I think that's my favorite part of the Seder was, like, we were, like, I was constantly, like, comparing, contrasting, like, what we were doing, and, like, I could see the things in common, and, like,
yeah.
And then at one point, one of my younger cousins was, like, giving a really lovely Devar Torah, and, like, is just speaks so nicely, and in my head, I'm, like, at what point, like, in his future, will he start leading his Seder?
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, at what point did, like... Because my uncles never do... Like, in 35 years of living in Toronto, they've done a Seder together once. They just do their own family thing. So I'm like, my uncles have six... One has six kids, one has seven kids. At what point do, like, each of those kids just...
Start to have their own Seder?
Yeah.
Well, especially when you have two, because then, like, you maybe do one out or one at home or whatever. That's funny. I told Jordan, I was like, I never want to host a Seder. I was like, I don't feel any need to lead a Seder.
I thought the exact opposite. I'm like, literally, I was sitting at one of the Seders, and I was like, my brother...
You're like, I would do a way better job. See, I was like,
no,
I will not do a better job.
It's not that I do a better job. I just think that, like, it's so fun to, like, sort of facilitate that space.
Oh, I think they're so long, and I don't know.
You have to make it fun.
We did. We had a really fun time. The year of COVID, we did it with, like, our pod at the time was, like, three of our really close friends, so there were five of us, and it was just, like, perfect. We were all feeling, like, we each felt, like, passionate about a different thing, and so we, like, really...
Rachel, Joe...
No. Actually, it was... Oh, different pod? Yeah, it was a different group. It was... Yeah.
You can also cut out all these, like, no one needs to
hear. Anyway. Like, you're the only one who
cares. I was just curious.
Yeah. Anyway, so that was really sweet. And then, like, last year I was at a Seder that was really long, which was nice. This one I loved because my cousins were like, are we going to keep talking or are we going to keep reading? Like, they were like, can we keep going? Like, who's supposed to read? Like, they were like, really kept the pace. That's nice. So I was funny. Like, that's good. So Maki didn't take us too long. I also got to polish all the silver. That's my favorite part of a Seder, to be honest, is polishing silver. I, like, walked in and, like, we're looking for things to do to help, and it's like my aunt is cooking and, like, the kids are being crazy or whatever, and I found some silver and silver polish. It's, like, out on the table. I was like, does this silver need polishing? And I spent the next, like, 2 hours polishing silver, and it was great. Love an activity you can do sitting down.
Yeah. I did all of the potato peeling sitting down this year.
Nice.
My Uncle Arthur, he gives out chocolate chips.
Oh, shoot. Actually, I do need to answer this.
Okay. One second. What I was going to say was my Uncle Arthur gives chocolate chips for good questions and for good answers, and so that was really funny.
There was a really good conversation in the Pardes group chat that I wanted to save some of the ideas that were, like, how to keep the Seder interesting, or like how to bring food into different parts of the Seder. So he,
like, but like, no, but like, that's the thing, like, my cousins too, from after Manishtana, you're not supposed to eat. And so, like, they just, everyone was like accumulating their chalk chips until we got to Shulchan Aruch. But,
that's so funny.
But the other thing that they do is so funny is like, the whole point of the Seder is like to be generating, like asking questions. Why do we do this? Why do we do that? We do that because, like, so the children will ask. And so here are my cousins who are like in very fancy, like high brow, high level yeshivas, like very from yeshivas. My cousin Dovi, and like every single thing he do, he'd ask a question because like, and like you know, like you ask like because you know the answer to it, and so he'd just be asking questions on like the dumbest things, and it was cracking me up because he was asking with like such sincerity, and his older brother Noam kept being like, "That's a dumb question. We don't have to answer that. We just move on."
Oh my God.
But at one point I was like, and Dovi's also like a very serious guy. I was like, Dovi, if yeshiva doesn't work out, you have to get into the acting game because you are like the delivery every time. And he laughed. And then I got 2 chocolate chips for making Dovi laugh. Nice. Cause like that was a big feat.
Mazel tov.
Thank you. Thank you. It was just so funny.
That's how I felt with when I was student teaching with my kids. I like had them do question asking exercises. Some of the questions they asked, I was like, this is obviously not what I want.
Yeah.
So.
Also, I feel like six minutes in.
Yeah.
I never posted an apology.
Oh yeah.
Thing. Cause what happened was,
what had happened was
we skipped a week and I was supposed to post an apology.
Yeah.
And then we were going to skip the next week and I was going to post it then. And then like my life sort of fell to shit for a little bit. It was just like very hectic and wild. Yeah. And so I didn't do it. And then we were going to post this week. And I was like, here's our official apology.
We didn't do Mitsora.
But
we did Tazria.
We did Tazria with Rachel.
No, yeah, we did Tazria. That was episode with Rachel, which I think was a really high quality episode that we put out for everyone.
Mitsora, we had a plan. We were going to watch Turning Red, which I think would have worked perfectly.
Yeah.
It would have worked really well. If you guys want to go back and do the work yourself, like, the parallels are there. And then Achrayimot we didn't do.
No, Achrayimot will be this week.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. So we actually haven't missed one yet.
Oh, we only missed one.
Because last week was, like, a Pesach reading, right? And so, right, last week they didn't do...
Yeah.
They don't do a Torah reading. It's just Shabbat Shel Pesach. And then this week they'll do Achrayimot. So technically we haven't, but we will miss one.
We missed one.
And Mitsora.
That aside, I apologize for leaving you in the lurch. Like we were just in different time zones. We were really busy.
Yeah.
And look, if we miss one, we've had a good run so far. We're back on it. We're giving you a bonus episode. We're doing a Pesach ep.
Yeah.
Maybe
we'll do a twofer next week. We can do Achrayimot and whatever.
Kedoshim.
Yeah.
Kedoshim is one of my favorite parshiot. So we have to do Kedoshim. We have to probably figure out what we're doing for Kedoshim. I have a stellar Devar Torah for Kedoshim that makes it my favorite, and I like it.
All right. Wow, I can't wait for that. Something for us all to look forward to.
I also got so many chocolate chips. I have one Pesach Devar Torah that I do like at the Seder because it's to do with the Haggadah.
That you got so many chocolate chips for.
I got so many. I got like 6 chocolate chips for that.
Wow.
It kills every time. It's a great Devar Torah.
Do you want to get it right now? Or?
Well, it's... I heard it in high school from one of my rabbis. The part where like the 5 rabbis are sitting in Bnei Brak.
Mm-hmm.
And then their students come in and say, like, it's time. Like, you've been doing this until, like, the time of reading the morning Shema.
Yeah.
So 2 different questions. The first is, like, that's such a weird way to say, like, wrap it up. Like, you could say, it's morning, sun's shining, what are you doing? Like, why is it associating, like, Shema? Like, it's not Shema, sorry, it's Kriyat Shema Shel Shacharit.
Yeah.
Shacharit's the key point there. And the other question is like, why is it this story? Like, it's about the 5 rabbis. This story appears elsewhere, which I found out this year in Rav Sachs' Haggadah of, like, he had, like, the collection of essays. The story only appears, I'm pretty sure, in this form in the Haggadah.
Okay.
It appears in, like, somewhere else.
I thought it was in Pirkei Avot. It's not in the Talmud?
So there's a version of it, according to Rav Sachs, in the Tosefter, I think, of, like, but it's like, it's different. It's like Rabban Gamliel.
Yeah.
I don't think it's any of the rabbis. And they use a different euphemism. They use like the crows are crowing.
Right.
Or whatever, cawing, whatever it is. So it's like, it appears slightly different elsewhere, like the same message, but different details. And so the question is like, why this message? Why these rabbis? And so the rabbis part is that what these rabbis have in common is really interesting. Four out of the five of them are Kohanim, according to our tradition. And the fifth, Rabbi Akiva, according to our tradition, is his parents were converts. And so what do Kohanim and a son of converts have in common is that none of their ancestors, according to our Masorah and our understanding of what happened in Egypt, were actually enslaved. Like, right, the house, like Shevet Levi were studying Torah in Egypt, according to the rabbis.
That's very silly.
And never actually enslaved. Like, that's whatever. They have the whole reasoning for that. And if
they were studying Torah before the Torah was given to
them. Well, no, they were like learning, right? They were like this higher house, whatever it is. Like, the Levim, according to the rabbis, were studying and not enslaved, didn't do work. And the son of converts, obviously, like...
This is a skeptical face.
I can see that.
Okay, let's get to the Devar part.
Well, that's the point, right? Is that, like, this is the first half of the Devar is that, like, these rabbis are sitting and learning about Pesach for so long, but none of their ancestors were actually enslaved.
Okay.
And the point is that this isn't about, like, our individual ancestors, right? It's not about Valerie's ancestors who were enslaved and Shoshana's ancestors. It's about the collective memory. It happened to all of us at once. This is part of all of our narrative, no matter if historically or spiritually, you know, it was part of us or not. Like, it's a collective memory. It happened to all of us all at once. It is about our people. That's the first half. The second half is...
So far, you've earned zero chocolate chips from me.
Why? That's great.
I'm just telling you.
It's so good. The second half, and this is where it gets a bit Chabad-ish, because it's Chabad Rabbi who gave it to me. What's the point of the Pesach Seder? It's to teach, it's to educate. This story comes right before we read about the four sons. And the whole point of the Seder is that, like, people come in and they leave with more knowledge. And so when the students come in and they say, rabbis, it's the time of Kriyat Shema Shel Shacharit, like, you reach the morning Shema, they're not saying that you've reached a point in time and that's why your Seder has been successful and you can stop now. What they're saying is that Shacharit becomes an acronym. You can drop the Yud because the Yud is for, like, vocalization, right? It's to make the Is sound, but you can do that with a Chirik. Shacharit now stands for Shin Chet Resh Tav, for She'en Oladeh Yodeh L'Shol Chacham Rasha Tam.
Oy.
Right? So Shacharit becomes
this
an acronym.
This did get really Chabad-y.
It did.
I wasn't sure what you meant when you said that until you got to this part, and I was like, that is
Shacharis. Shacharis becomes an acronym, right? It's you've reached the point or you've educated the people at your Seder enough that they can walk away knowing what happened and feeling connected to it. And that's the point of a Seder. And I got 6 chocolate chips for that, bitch.
Okay.
It's a good. It's
you'd
good.
You'd earn 2 chocolate chips from me.
Nah, it was
but good. Then I would take them away because you spent so long telling the story.
Well, you kept interrupting me and with your skeptical face. I had to defend my point. See, saying this to my uncle Seder, everyone's on board. They're like, yeah, Levi, not enslaved. Mm-hmm. Everyone's like, yeah, we're on the same page. I had to spend the extra time playing catch up to convince you of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my job is so hard.
It's so hard. It's so hard. Wow. Well, my Seder, like I said, had kept a good pace. Nobody was given chocolate chips.
Mine went to 3 each night. It was horrible. It was so, like, all so tired.
Yeah.
My cousin went to her in-laws for a Seder, the second Seder. She got home at 4:45 in the morning.
No.
And they live, like, 5 minutes away. So it's not like they had to walk a half hour or something.
No.
They finished at, like, 4:30
like
in the morning because they just sing on. They have, like, a kumzitz afterwards and she had to stay with her husband. And I'm like, I would rather pass away. Like, there's no way you can make this. This is not Shavuos.
Yeah.
You don't have to stay up all night, okay, you guys? We don't.
Like I said, someone at our Seder, I won't name names.
Name names.
Fell asleep.
Who was
at least 4 times. I told you before we started recording.
I wasn't paying attention.
Well, that...
Who was it?
Maybe next time you'll listen.
Who was it? You were talking to Meryl. I was distracted.
Maybe. Anyway, people fall asleep. Friend. You were saying that your uncle falls asleep too.
My uncle... Gottliebs can fall asleep anytime anyway.
Yeah.
My uncle's proof of that. One time my uncle was driving home from the airport...
And he fell asleep? That's so dangerous.
No, at every red light. Somehow he timed it perfectly. Every red light, head down, as soon as it turned green, up and at it. Like,
Shut
I don't
up.
Know how he does it. It's a superpower.
I hate that.
Honestly impressive.
That's really scary. It's
honestly impressive.
Do you have a pop culture moment?
Here's the thing. So much has happened since we last recorded. Yeah. It feels like a million years ago. We haven't talked about the Oscars slam.
We're not going to talk about it.
I know. We haven't talked about Britney being pregnant. Oh, we haven't talked about Coachella.
The Shah Tova for Britney.
We haven't talked about Coachella. Oh
my god, this is my pop culture moment. Okay, this is my pop culture moment. I was on Instagram this week, and it's Coachella, it's Easter, and it's Pesach. And those three things were really represented very equally across my Instagram feeds.
That's very funny.
And it just felt, very kismet.
Yeah.
All of those, they're similar. The vibes are similar, and yet so different.
That's
it. And some of our friends had a Seder in Sinai. Did you see the videos?
I saw one story.
And I was like, wow, that is also really, that's like a Coachella vibe, but like in Sinai at a Seder, it was
wild.
I
wonder what the rules of like going to the Sinai Peninsula are for Pesach.
What do you mean?
Like, is it not like disputed territory between Egypt and Israel?
No.
No.
Israel returned it.
To Egypt.
Yeah, it's definitely Egypt.
So it's part of Egypt.
But you
so
have
you're returning to Egypt for the holiday that commemorates Yetzias Mitzrayim.
I agree. I think it's like a little bit weird.
Right? Like, it's weird.
One of our friends then is climbing, like, there's a mountain called Har Sinai.
Yeah.
Which people don't think is like the Har Sinai, but there is a mountain that's called Sinai. And apparently there's you can see an incredible sunrise. And then after the sun comes up, there are just all these Israelis. A couple of our friends who went to Sinai because they like wanted to go to the beach.
Yeah.
And they said it was like you're just surrounded by Israelis.
Yeah.
Which was
surprising.
Yeah.
As
if you haven't actually left. That's how I felt. I sent you this text when I was like sitting at the gate in New York. I like got there absurdly early. So I'm chilling at the gate. I've had my little edible. I'm like having a great time. And then slowly, like, you know, all of Am Yisrael starts coming to this gate.
Yeah.
And I was just like, at first, you know, I've been living in the US. I had been like hanging out with non-Jews I've been staying with non-Jews. And so like, I'm like, oh, Am Yisrael, like, so sweet.
Nope,
and then, like, an hour
nope.
later, I was like, my God, I hate these people.
Yeah. It took me approximately 35 seconds getting off the plane in Israel to be like, fuck Israel.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, my God, I texted Meryl. I was like, these guys.
Yeah.
Grind my gears.
With their hats and their little hat bags.
It's just like, everything was going wrong and I was so tired and I'm just like, I hate everyone, I hate Israel.
Yeah.
Anyway,
beside
the point.
Getting on the plane, I ended up first behind these two boys who like were both like yeshivish age and like chatting about like turns out they knew people in common. They're both from Long Island. And then it turns out one of the guys like hadn't gotten, they like made you get your temperature checked before you got on the plane. Did they do that to you?
Nope.
Anyway. They made us do it, and then you had to get a stamp on your boarding pass. So this kid hadn't gotten a stamp on his boarding pass, so he goes off, and then he left his, like, rolling luggage. And the woman's like, I'm not in charge of the... Whatever. So that was funny. And so then it turns out the woman behind one of the young guys, she's like, are you so-and-so, like, so-and-so's child? And he's like, yeah. And she's like, I know your mother. And it turns out they're both Long Island Jews. And by the time we get through the second round of security, she's like trying to convince him to go on a date with her daughter.
Oh my God,
and it was just, and he's like, oh, like, she's not really my type. And she's like, you've both changed a lot, I'm sure. It was so funny.
Okay. No, thank God I did not have that experience on any of my flights. I did have the worst experience at LaGuardia Airport.
Yeah.
This is before we get back to my pop culture moment.
Oh, yeah.
LaGuardia Airport.
Because nobody loves anything more than airport content.
Honestly, I could listen to it all day.
okay, our next podcast will be an airport podcast.
It's us rating airports. I got there like 3 hours before a flight to Canada, which is like absurd for the US to Canada. Usually it's two. I get there three because I know airports have been crazy.
Yeah.
Worldwide, crazy airports.
Yeah.
I check in.
Mm-hmm.
As I'm checking in, people who had gotten there 2 hours ago for their flight are coming back because they've missed their flight because of the security line. And I'm already like, what the fuck is going on? And I can see in front of me there's a security line. It's really long. I'm like, that's crazy. Like, why is it taking so long? I check in. I go to the security line. Like, it the whole way that it snakes through, taken up. So I start following it. It's at the one, like, the security starts at, like, point blank one end of the airport. Uh-huh. The line goes down the entire length of it, the width of it, back around to the start, and then out the door. So it's more than 2.5 times the length of the entire terminal is the security line. And my heart, like, I felt sick. It was disgusting. I'm like, no one should ever have to wait in line this long. I think I have, like, intergenerational trauma of, like, people being cattled.
Uh-huh.
I felt the same when I arrived in Ben Gurion and had to get a COVID test. And they're, like, shuttling people into this, like, tent. And everyone's in these, like, haphazard lines getting tested. And I'm like, this is the Holocaust. I'm like, just, like, fight or flight. And I'm like, I have to get COVID tested. I can't do either right now.
Yeah. So you started fighting people.
No, so the LaGuardia line was just fucking crazy. And I call my mom and I'm like, Gail, you've never... And sometimes I call my mom Gail, whatever. I'm like, Gail, you've never seen anything like this in your fucking life. Like, it's crazy. Like, I'm going mental. Like, I'm having a panic attack. Like, it's not okay. I see a sign. It says, like, fast pass, $15. Buy it. I try and find the entrance. Here's where it gets really funny. I had booked... I'd gotten an email to book, like, a upgrade. Because those flights where you have to pay $30 for baggage, right, on top of the ticket. It's an $80 flight.
Yeah.
Plus $30 for baggage.
Right. I remember this whole thing.
Right. And so if I had paid $40 instead, it'd be a business class ticket because it was like a small flight and not a lot of people on it.
Right.
So I paid an extra like $10, $20. Like this is already like a few weeks ago for a business class ticket.
Uh-huh.
That I don't see has priority stamped underneath it. So I leave the line, which is like 2.5 times the fucking length. And I go and I find the priority line and I cut the whole thing.
Wow.
And I cut the whole thing because of my... I was like, I'll treat myself to like an extra $20 and a boarding class ticket.
And look how it saved you.
Mamash it say it like Hashkocha Pratis.
Hashem was moving you.
Hashkocha Pratit.
Wow.
It was crazy.
Wow.
Anyway, my pop culture moment. I don't even have one. Lizzo hosted SNL this week. That was because you said like for you it was Easter, Pesach, and Coachella. For me, it's been Ramadan, Pesach, Easter, and Lizzo on SNL is all of my content.
Like major holidays.
The four holidays converging, and she was fantastic. She was so funny. Her new songs were great. She's a great performer. She played the flute. She broke in like every sketch, which was a bit annoying.
Mm.
But like her comedic timing was like so impressive, and it just made me laugh the entire time, and it felt like a cultural, like they call it, was a watershed moment. No, what's the word I'm looking for? It just felt like it's been so long since SNL has been like an event to look forward to.
Yeah.
Rather than just like random hosts, because it was like she was the host, she was the guest,
knocked
it out the park. It was really funny. It was great. It was a good time.
I'm going to have to watch it. I've been like seeing like clips and stuff, but I haven't watched all of it.
They've done it a couple of times. They do like a TikTok roundup. It's like someone swiping through their phone.
Yeah.
This one they did was so funny. And I know that you spend time on TikTok and you will know every single thing that they make fun of. Like literally every single...
Oh, I love it.
The guy who walks around on all fours, they do him. They do the Miranda Cosgrove sound of like, what's your favorite swear word?
Yeah.
Maybe fuck. And then like the crazy laugh, but it's like, it's so funny. It's really good.
I actually do swear a little bit.
Yeah.
What's your favorite swear word? Maybe that. Laughing.
Anyway, I think that's, mine's also the convergence of holidays.
Yeah.
We're 23 minutes in. We don't have a Pasha to talk about, which is fine. I don't think we have to recap.
No, we don't have to. Yeah, we watched The Prince of Egypt, 1998 film.
I'm assuming that everyone knows this. Like, if you don't...
If you don't, you should go watch it because...
Go watch it. Yeah. And if you don't know the story of, like, the Exodus, go read it. It's a great story.
Right, because you probably really
lazy.
You probably didn't actually get the story from the Haggadah because, weirdly...
Yeah, it doesn't talk about it at all.
Wait, okay, this was something at the Seder. Before the Seder, Yarden asked this trivia question multiple times of how many times is Moshe mentioned in the Haggadah. It's not zero, it's one.
It's one, and it's in Echad Miyadeh, right?
No. It's in Magid. It says, like, Hashem and his servant, Moshe.
Oh, yeah. So I'd say it's twice.
Oh, because it's also in... Oh.
Because Shtayim...
It says Lechot HaBrit.
Oh. Well,
but it doesn't
the English
say...
one. Two are the Lechot that Moshe brought.
Oh.
And one is Hashem.
Anyway, Yarden also,
Hiya,
Dan. I've already made the decision I'm not editing any of this. Hiya, I'm just going
to no, you have post to edit this. No, because, like, you have to edit it a tiny bit because we spoke about people's names.
That we were I could cut that part out. Yeah. Okay. You'll never know who we spoke about, except for Yarden. She was practicing, like, the order of the, like, the Seder order, you know, the song that you sing every time, all day. And I was like, Yarden, there's not going to be a test. Like, she was, like, practiced the Chatan Yodea. And, like, all day she's practicing. And I'm like, Yarden, like, it's going to be fine. She's like, do you know all the plagues in order? Like, go, English.
That's her day. Kinim ar dzavershkin.
Well, I said in English, but.
Blood, frogs, lice. Are of locusts?
No, I think that one's pestilence.
Pestilence. And then Dever is animals.
Mm-hmm. And then I think six is...
No, Arov is... Oh my god.
You don't know them either. My brain... You failed the test.
No, because I know it in Hebrew. Dansardea kinim Arov Devershkin. Oh, because I think Arba is when, like, the cattle dies, and then there's the wild animals.
Yeah, the, like, and then horde of animals.
Boils.
Yeah.
And then locusts.
Yeah.
And then darkness? Am I missing one?
No,
hail, then darkness, then Makabobar. Whew, wow, I thought they were going to take away my Jew card for a second.
Yeah, that would have been embarrassing for you.
So embarrassing.
Anyway, she was practicing all day, and I was like, there's not going to be a test. But it was actually nice that we practiced a little bit. So, you're done. This is my formal apology for making fun of you and for bringing it up again now and making fun of you again now.
I'm sorry that time you got diarrhea in Barnes & Noble's and I told everyone.
And I'm sorry for bringing it up again now. Thank you for getting my reference. We're really on the same page today.
Okay, a couple of favorites. One, favorite... like Seder song from the Seder, or like part of the Seder.
Like,
really?
I also tried to convince her that we should learn the dance from the Basheva Dance Company and perform it this year at the Seder, and she was like, there's no way. And I learned that she does not do well with choreographed dances.
Good to know.
Yeah,
I'm gonna follow that away for things I know about Yarden now. does not like choreographed dances.
Or no, doesn't do, like them, can't do okay, them. Doesn't do. Has an inability to learn choreographed dances.
Filing it away. I only like Echad Miyodeh if we do it the way my family does it, which is as fast as you fucking can, because that song is long, and it's like...
Why do all of the songs count up? They all count up or down, right? They're all, like, right, because it's the same Echad Gagya, it's like, it builds on each other, yeah.
I'm sure there's a nice Devator in there somewhere.
Yeah.
What's
your favorite?
My favorite, like, I love Ki Lo No'er and Adir Hu.
Okay.
I just, like, love my family's tunes for them. Like, they're really fun. Yeah. Again, like, my family's, like, we don't surprise. I think people are surprised sometimes. We don't really have, like, shticky seders.
Yeah.
But, like, the one thing that we do is, like, the second we start Nirtza, speed read that shit to the end. We sing Halal all together. Like, we have the same tunes that we do every year. And then, like, my brother speed reads, like, the two... Like, you do the alternate nights. Either you do, like, Balayla or you do Pesach. There's, like, just two long things. Like, all the things that happened at Pesach time.
Okay.
Or at midnight. And then, like, literally the minhag is, you have to keep up. Usually you have to keep up with my dad as fast as he sang. And no one could do it. And then when my brother started leading the Seder, it was, like, as fast as Jacob. And I can do it faster than Jacob. Don't tell anyone. But, like, I can do it faster than my brother.
It's such younger sibling energy.
I just can. But Echad Miyodeh, like, my cousins are doing, I'm like, this song is taking 15 minutes.
Yeah.
You're supposed to be tongue-tied. Mm-hmm. You're supposed to not be able to sing this probably. Mm-hmm. But my favorite songs are, Adir Hu and Echad Miyodeh. My other question is very important.
Yeah.
Favorite plague?
Favorite plague? Like, based on Prince of Egypt?
I'm gonna say no, only because it's a montage in The Prince of Egypt, except for Blood, which it, like, starts it off. It's right. A montage.
I liked the montage approach, honestly.
Yeah.
Which is my favorite? I like. I like them all. I'm pro them. No, I like Locust the best. I actually had a really good devar about. There's, like, they talk about. In the Talmud, what blessing you're supposed to say over locusts. Is it in... No, sorry. It's in the Mishnah.
Yeah.
They talk about it. And so I had a really good devar about, like, eating your locust.
Nice. I like the frogs.
Yeah. Somebody messaged, we'll read all of them in a minute, but somebody said it should have been one big frog.
Well, yeah, that's a mafarish. Because Tsvardeya is the singular frog.
Right.
And so I think it's the Rashi says it was just one giant frog, and every time they hit it to try and make it go away, like, the frog spurred out of it.
Yeah.
I like...
But that's not pshat, because the pshat was like, it was in their beds, it was in their...
Yeah, well, yeah. It's like, it's just like a take on the word Tsvardeya. And right. Another mafarish says, like, no, sometimes you just see, like... one animal, like you're talking about like a horde, and so like you just use the one.
Mm.
And another mafarish says it was like it was a swarm, there were so many of them, it was like it was one, and so that's why, whatever. There's like a whole
bunch of rat ones. King, you know, and all the
oh, stop bringing up rat together. Kings. How did you find a way to bring rat kings into this? You know, I hate rat kings.
I somehow find a way to bring them up a lot, actually. Yeah, I brought them up while I was in New York, too. Bleh. I saw one while I was in New York. Bleh. I'm just kidding.
Oh my god.
Anyway. I did see a rat running across in the subway.
I saw a rat too. And it ran like, past me.
And I gasped. I was like, and I was like, I'll never be a real New Yorker.
I was like, now I am a real New Yorker because I've seen a rat run past me as I wait for my friends on the corner.
Oh, it was funny.
Oh, hello, Meryl. We're filming in my apartment. Meryl, what's your favorite plague? We're going to cut this out.
I'm not going to cut it out.
What's your favorite plague? You have to talk loudly for the...
My favorite plague is, I don't know.
Oh, wow.
Fiery hail.
I was actually going to say, fiery hail. Yes, yeah. You're correct.
Nice.
I just, like, radiate that, don't I?
Yeah. Love that. That's the energy you bring.
Love that for you. Should we talk about the movie?
Yeah, let's talk about the movie. Did you watch it? When was the last time you watched it?
Like... 2 months ago.
Okay.
Like, I make it a regular habit to watch it. I also, like, constantly listen to the music. Like, this movie is my life.
Yeah.
Since I still have the VHS on my shelf at home.
Yeah.
That was the one VHS. That and Mulan. I made sure my mom didn't throw out, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I made my mom keep all of mine, so they're all on a shelf in my bedroom.
I think we have some in the shed.
We have Babe picking this. We have Babe, the original, and then I think we might have Babe picking the city.
Australia's
also.
Finest export, yeah. I must say. Really love this movie. This movie...
I love the animation style. Like, it's fun to watch. It feels like it hasn't, like, aged badly.
It's one of the first movies that does a mixture of, like, CG and hand-drawn animation. It's mostly hand-drawn, but then in some of the bigger sequences, you can see the CGI.
Yeah.
And you can, like, tell.
Right.
The splitting of the scene. Also, the scene where... they hit the Sphinx's nose at the beginning,
yes.
Ramses and Moses. Like, the nose falling down the scaffolding is a CGI nose, and the rest of it's hand-drawn. And that
that's so funny.
So when they're, like, together, you can clearly tell. But, like, whatever. Like, it used to scare me. Like, so much of it used to scare me. Specifically, the opening sequence used to scare the absolute shit out of me. Even though I knew it was coming. Not even, like, the slavery part. It's a really... Picture this, Valerie and Debuers. Where it's, like, on the sky, and it's, like, the really nice, like, quiet music of, like, the main theme. And I knew it was coming every time, and every time it scared me when it, like, pans down, and then it goes, like, and then it goes into that song. And they used to scare me. I don't know why. I could never see it coming, yeah. That was the only thing that scared me.
Well, because I, like, stopped paying attention for a second, and then all of a sudden, like, Yocheved is like putting motion into the basket. I was like, wait, did they explain like why she's doing that? No. But they don't explain it, but you do see the Egyptians coming and like going in and like see a bassinet. You don't see them like murder a child.
Yeah.
But obviously they make it obvious later on.
Well, you also, in like the dream sequence when he falls asleep and he sees it, like, exactly. That's a really cool sequence. But like you get the backstory.
It's not a dream
then.
Sequence. I think he's seeing like the pictures on the wall.
Bro, what are you talking about? He falls asleep. Valerie.
What dream sequence are you talking
about? He falls asleep after the greatest song in the whole movie. He falls asleep against a pillar.
Yeah.
And he has the vision of the dream where he, like, sees, like, the moving wall. And he's, like, on the wall itself in the 2D.
Right.
And then he wakes up. After he wakes up, he goes and he finds to see proof of it on the walls because he knows that the history is going to be on the walls. But it's a dream. It's a dream sequence.
Hmm.
Because it's all moving, Valerie. Like, they don't actually move. And he's
there. I
know
that they don't actually move. It's like Harry Potter or something.
And he's there as an adult witnessing it, like, on the wall in the 2D. It's a dream. Or it's a vision from God.
See, that's what I was like, he's seeing the wall. I didn't realize that he like wakes up at some point. Like I thought he was like seeing, like he's looking at the wall, and it's like he's understanding.
You see him fall asleep and like everything starts moving because it's also because his eyes close and then it opens and it's in the 2D and he's like in the dream. What movie did you watch, mate?
Are your dreams in 2D?
No, his dream is in 2D. Shut up. It's also...
Such a specific thing to get offended about.
Here's the thing.
Your dreams are in 2D.
No, I'm just like, what movie did you watch? Why weren't you paying attention?
I was making something.
Oh my God, every time.
Anyway.
What's your favorite song from the movie?
I don't really have one. I did have a question about the first song because they're saying bring us to the promised land, right?
Deliver us. They're saying deliver us.
Deliver
us.
Whatever. I have not seen the movie as many times as you, and so you're going to have to just like let go.
I can't. Okay, continue.
Anyway, they're saying deliver us to the promised land, but that's like, I was thinking about the drosh of that, of like, were the slaves like wanting their freedom in that, like, were they really dreaming of freedom in that way? Because, like, the elders know when Moshe goes back and, like, mentions God, they, like, know who Moshe is talking about.
Right.
But, like, were the Israelites dreaming of a promised land in that way?
Interesting.
That felt a little too early for me.
I wonder. Yeah, it's true. I know. I think it makes for a great song.
Yeah, sure. Excellent song. Excellent songs throughout the movie.
I think that a lot of like
how they made this movie without Lin-Manuel Miranda, we'll never know. But they did manage to make some catchy songs.
Shut up. It's Stephen Schwartz, bro. I think that like it does a really good job of drawing on like lots of different traditions, and so. Like, we don't necessarily know in the text what Bnei Israel, like, feel or believe at that point. We just know that they cry, after the death of the king, they cry out to God to free them from the slavery. But we don't really know what their relationship is like with God.
Yeah.
According to the, like, Moshe is clearly worried because at the burning bush, he's like, what am I going to say to them? What are they going to believe? But God's like, no, they'll believe you. So, like, clearly they have some kind of, like, understanding of it.
Well, and Moshe doesn't seem to have any issues with the Israelites, like, paying attention up until... What are you looking at?
Just how much my phone battery is.
Like, it's only after they leave that... Or, like, when they get to the sea that they start to be like, couldn't we have just died in Egypt?
Yeah.
He doesn't have any issue getting them to follow him early on, which maybe means they were, like, waiting for it.
Yeah. I also wonder if it's, like, because it's one of the songs, so it's, like, not necessarily part of, like, the whole plot of the movie, but it's a catchy song, how much of, like, current Jewish consciousness or, like, contemporary Jewish, like, after Egypt, like, and after, it's after the diaspora, really, of, like, we're dispersed from the land.
Yeah.
And our entire collective memory is just getting back to, like, Tzion.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, Lashana Haba, Birusha. Right. Like, so I wonder how much of, like, that cultural psyche played into, like, the writing of the music.
Right. Makes sense.
I
do appreciate, like, how, like, if you've studied the text closely, which we both have, it's, like, really fun to watch the movie because they do a really nice job of, like, the conversation that Moshe and that Moses and God has is, like, It's shot from the text. Yeah.
Word for word. Yeah. I remember that in high school, we watched it in class, and I was like, this is literally, like, the exact same.
And it's, like when God is, like, I am what I am, or, like, right, like, responds in that way, and you're, like, it's weird when you see it in the text, and it's weird when you see it in the movie, and you're, like, what's going on? But,
what's really cool, I have so many fun facts about this movie, the voice of God is Moshe, Val Kilmer voices Moshe. Yeah. It's his voice. But they've layered it with the voices of, like, other men and women to make it, like...
Like, all the members of the cast recorded God's voice, and it was supposed to be just a bunch of whispers stacked on top of each other, they had to make, too quiet.
But they had to make one, like, more pronounced, and so it was... It's like, that to me, is such, like, if you want to think about it, like, deeply in terms of, you know, like...
That, like, God speaks to you in your own voice.
Right, like, how... Like, and I'm pretty sure there is midrash of, like... Like... speaking to him in his father's voice, like, it has to be a familiar voice talking back at you, or, like, what is a connection to God? Is it, like, actual visions? Right. Is it you're talking to, like, just there's a voice coming down? Is it a conversation within yourself?
Right.
But, because, like, these two voices are the same voice talking back to one another.
Well, it's interesting, like, also if you think about, like, your voice sounds different to you than it sounds to other people, yeah. too. So that,
yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
I thought, yeah, really nicely done, all of those pieces.
You were born of my mother, Yocheved. Sorry. stacked cast.
Okay. It's too Anglo. I was watching, I was like, Sandra Bullock sounds sarcastic as Miriam. Like, I couldn't get it. Once I started seeing Sandra Bullock, it was like,
but yeah. Like, a lot of Jews in the cast.
Yeah.
Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah.
Leonard Nimoy, I'm pretty sure, was in it.
Yeah, but right, like, very, like, all the songs are very, like, Anglo-sounding. Yeah. Like, there's, like, absolutely, like, no hint of, like, Mizrahi, like, culture, like, anything that feels authentic. Look,
It was 1998. I'll say, if this movie was made again now, it would be different. It would be, like, a completely different voice, like, who they're casting for voiced actors.
Yeah.
Even though, like, there are a lot of Jews in that cast.
Right.
I
don't have issues with it being Jews or not. Yeah, I have issues with it being like Anglo white and like people. White. Yeah.
Like very clearly European Jews. And it's also like, it would be different musically. I agree.
I would love to see a remake. Like, this is a great movie and like, it would be fun to see.
It's like a West End show that is very much exactly the same. Like, they haven't changed it stylistically at all. I don't think. I will say, like, I really appreciate, like, the Hebrew in it. Like, Ofra Haza in the... Like, so Ofra Haza, first of all, is not a Ashkenazi Jew.
Yeah.
And she voices Yocheved's singing voice. And she sings in Hebrew at the beginning.
Yeah.
And then at the end, they sing, like, Oz Yashirin, or parts of it. Like, it's such a shame that the Mariah Carey Whitney Houston version of When You Believe doesn't have the Hebrew in it.
Yeah.
Because that's the best part of the song. That for slaps. Sure. It's the best. It's so good. It's... Oh, you know who has a really good cover of it?
Who?
There's this Hasidic guy called Shulam.
Nice.
And he does a really great cover of Chagat, but he also has a really good When You Believe.
Mm.
He just has, like, a lovely voice. You know who else does... Last year, or during COVID, like the first COVID Pesach, they had something called Saturday Night Seder, where they had like a bunch of celebrities come online record things on Zoom. I don't know if this will mean anything to you, but if my Broadway bitches out there, Shoshana Bean and Cynthia Erivo sang it together. Ended me. It was so fucking good. And it's on Spotify now. It's the best. Okay. It was amazing. First of all, Shoshana Bean, amazing. Yeah. My favorite.
You've made me watch when we did Waitress.
Multiple things of hers. She's phenomenal. And Cynthia Erivo as well, in one of my favorite movies, The Voice of an Angel.
About Coley Shaw.
Yeah. Whew. Yeah, and they do When You Believe, and it's gorgeous. Mm. It's absolutely gorgeous.
Okay, should we read what people wrote to us? Oh, I have one more thought. There could have been a sequel. Like, at the end, he walks out with the tablets, and it's, like, it shows you're, like, at the point of view, you're standing behind Moshe looking out on Am Yisrael, and it's, like, where he's standing, you're, like, there could be a golden calf there. Like, I want the sequel. I want the next part.
Nah.
I was talking about, like, the idea of, like, doing this, this podcast, and when I was visiting the school that I'm going to be teaching at next year, the project they were doing was, like, proposing a Netflix show based on Yosef, which was awesome. I was like, love this idea. And I was like, that would be an amazing TV show. As we talked about, like, there are like so many good stories that like would make great movies or TV shows. Like, we don't need a sixth Spider-Man, but what we do need is like Yosef or part two of like the Israelites wandering in the desert.
No, I'd be boring.
You would. Okay. Well, obviously they would do the golden calf.
Yeah.
Okay, whatever. Fine. We don't have to.
I think it's just... What I really like about this movie, what it ends on, and I think this is, like, the point that captures about why it's, like, so perfectly... It's such a good movie. After all of the credits, if you went to the very end, there's a screen that comes up, and it has three quotes.
Oh.
One from... I want to say, like, the New Testament. One from... Like, it's a Christian quote, it's a Muslim quote, and it's a Jewish quote.
Okay.
about Moshe as a leader.
Hmm.
And the part they quote in for Jewish scripture is like at the very end of Devarim, it's like one of the last psukim of all of Torah, of like never again was there a prophet in Israel like Moshe who spoke to God face to face.
Yeah.
And the entire movie, and like I so heavily believe this, and I know that the Mefarshim disagree with me because they say no, this isn't about Moshe, but like Torah as a love letter to Moshe mm-hmm. is like the best plot twist of all time. You read this entire story about these people yeah. wandering through the desert, and you read their entire like Bereshit sets them up, right? Like the Sefer Bereshit is all about like out like the Jewish people's backstory,
right?
And then you've got like Shemot through Devarim is all about us like in the desert, and then at the very last second it like, turns actually, out this was all just a love letter to like this beautiful like leader of a man.
Yeah,
the best plot twist of all time.
Really interesting. I mean, I guess we should also talk about like what you think of like them working off of this drash that Moshe, number one of the big changes they make is it's not Bat Paro that finds him, it's like the wife of Pharaoh. Yeah. And then also that he grows up calling Pharaoh dad is yeah. like really an interesting choice, and that he and then it ends up being the Pharaoh, whatever, you all know the plot, but it ends up being the Pharaoh that grew up as his brother is now the Pharaoh when he goes back to like ask for
freedom. I think they clearly do that just to create a stronger parallel between them as leaders, because right. it's not like this guy, like the kid who grew up in the palace and like, you know, his grandfather, but it's like brothers head to head, and that makes it much more powerful.
Right.
But I also think, and our good friend Paige, like I think said this to Howard and like your Chumash teacher and convinced him to watch it, yeah. is that what Prince of Egypt does that the Torah doesn't do is builds the relationship between the two of them during, like, it's not just about like God hardening the heart, but it's about two men like going head to head and coming in with all of this baggage, which we know that they both do.
Yeah.
Or at least we know that Moshe does, right? Because like,
right, and like, yeah, exactly. Like the Moshe being trapped between like two worlds, yeah. And like this like inner struggle that he has. And yeah, it's obviously believable that he would have a relationship with the person who's like sitting on the throne. And it does make the hardening of the heart. Like watching it this time, like when you see the change in the animated character's face, yeah. of like after like Moshe like gives back the ring that yeah. what he had given to him, it's just like, yeah, that part makes a lot more sense, like, why Pharaoh is, like, so resistant
yeah.
For so many reasons. It's also very personal. And it makes sense the way that they, like, build the pressure that Pharaoh has put on himself of, like, yeah. that started with the pressure that his father put on him. And then it, again, makes sense that he has this, like, feeling of, like, he has to be toxic masculinity. He, right. like, has to not behave even, in a certain way.
Not even that, but, like, the fact that it's his younger brother who always got away with it, who's yeah. now challenging his power directly,
yeah,
built his character so much.
Yeah.
We didn't go through people like what people said on your phone.
Yeah, let's do
it. I will say that I know because I sent this in and I know someone else did. Yeah. Moshe, like, is too hot. First of all, he's yeah. supposed to be an old guy, like Charlton Heston in Ten Commandments.
That's exactly what, yeah, how old is he supposed to be?
I think he's supposed to be in his 80s when he comes back, maybe, or, like, even older than that.
Yeah.
I know, I think in his 80s, right? Because, like, I think he dies. He dies at 120 or, like, around 120. And 40 is in the desert. So he's, like,
yeah,
math 80-ish.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he's hot. And I don't know if you ever watched Jane the Virgin, but Zen Raphael is exactly him.
Yes.
I made that call, like, 4 years ago, and I cannot see anything else now.
Because Zero Dunn showed me another picture of some dude, and she was like, do you think this looks like Moshe? And I was like, the Ashkenazi version.
No,
of
no,
Moshe,
it's maybe. It's Raphael from Jane yeah. the Virgin, whose parents were Jewish and converted to Baha'ism. But he is like ethnically, like if he did 23andMe, that dude is Jewish.
Right.
Fantastic.
Love that. He can play Moshe. When he's 80, he could play Moshe in the remake.
He could.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, like, everyone talks a lot about like Moshe being their sexual awakening.
Yeah. That's what somebody said on our Instagram.
When I, like, first figured out I was gay, and then, like, you know, when you come back into all of these different, like, pieces of pop culture, and you're like, oh, like, that I see.
Yeah.
Sipora.
Oh, yeah. She's so hot.
Oh.
For sure.
My God.
Yeah.
First of all, Michelle Pfeiffer is a voice.
Yeah.
Hot as shit. Watching it back, at one point I was like, oh, it was always Tsupara. Like, that's what that feeling was. Hottie with a body, man.
Yeah, wow.
That's okay. Actually a direct Torah quote about Tsupara.
Somebody else said they should have cast more Jews, but the movie's perfect.
It is perfect, and I agree. And
then we also got a comment about it should have been one big frog. Should have been one big frog. Maybe we'll keep posting questions before we record for episodes.
It's a good idea.
It's a fun, fun little moment. Okay, anything else you want to say to wrap up?
I agree, it's a perfect movie. I'm really sad that for some reason the soundtrack isn't on Spotify.
That is weird.
But it's good that I've got a lot of the songs on my phone, like my iTunes, so I can listen to. Because the Broadway cast soundtrack just doesn't hit the same way.
You have to like actually watch the songs on YouTube to like really hear. Or you have to have the iTunes version.
I have the iTunes. Oh, it's just so good.
It was enjoyable. I really, had a good time this afternoon watching it.
Yeah. Always that last, like, that last frame where they do the Moshe quotes always gets me.
Are you choked up right now? You're gonna cry?
No, not really. I just also can, like, quote so much. Like, that, you were born of my mother, Yocheved. Every time it cracks me up. Yeah. Like, when I watch it, I can, like, quote it.
It's also weird that they, like, choose to, like, not develop our own relationship with Moshe. Like...
Yeah, I think... Okay, perfect. I think the one thing I critique this movie on is that it character assassinates Aaron.
Yeah.
Like, he just is a coward. He doesn't do anything. He's not his right-hand man.
Right.
Moshe acts alone as the messenger of God. We know that's not true.
Right.
And the Miriam connection is stronger. I don't mind that the Miriam connection is stronger.
She has her timbrel at the end.
She does. I also think I wrote a Devar Torah on the plane. I feel like Moshe is a character who's defined by the women in his life,
mm-hmm.
especially very early on, right? Like his, like the Holy Crypt of Devar Torah, like his birth mother, his adoptive mother, right. and his sister, like at a very like pivotal moment in his life of his birth, are all watching over him and all have compassion and love for him, and that's what makes him survive. And like, when we then see him as an adult, that's what he sort of recreates in that moment, right? Mm. Like, he chooses to save the Israelite, like, in a moment of compassion and, like, justice. And I think so what I appreciate about the movie is it plays on that a bit, right? Like, Miriam sings the song of Yocheved, like, just that tiny, like, little refrain.
Oh, I wanted to talk about this, yeah.
Yeah, that sort of, like, so I like that connection of, like, Miriam is a big character in his life. You see later in the Torah, like, the episode of him striking the rock comes immediately after her death.
Yeah.
Right, and, like, I think it's very plausible to read it. Like, this is just a guy, like,
grieving
his sister, like, his older sister.
I think that's a funny plot device when they use, like, a lullaby, where I'm like,
he's not gonna
a tiny baby. There's no way infant. He remembers that song, that it, like, awakens this thing in him. Yeah. It's, like, so I was, like, it's like, it's everywhere. That's really funny.
So I think...
She had to do something to prove to him that, like, what she was saying was true, but...
I will say, I can't let this podcast go without saying that Jethro is just the single greatest character.
Oh, yeah.
And Through Heaven's Eyes is just...
Right, to see him come back in a sequel would be so fun. Yeah. Come on.
I don't know, but Through Heaven's Eyes is just, like, the perfect song. Like, I love that whole montage, that beautiful, like, them falling in love and getting married and, like, that. I think they developed that relationship so well. I will say that I think that the most underrated song that I love is the one where he's, like, falling asleep of, like, where he's like, this is my home.
Yeah.
You know, like, that one. And it's, like, when he's just been faced with... seeing Miriam and, like, that memory. Right. And then, like, runs, and he's, like, trying to reaffirm his Egyptian identity. I think that's sick. Oh, it's such a good song.
Yeah.
But they're all really good songs.
The other thing that I liked that this movie filled in for me was, it always hasn't sat well with me that this baby shows up, like, on Pharaoh's doorstep.
Yeah.
And, like, he just takes him in as part of, like, the royal family. And it makes sense. It's, like, his daughter or whatever. Like, you could, like, draw out that. But it's, like, you have to know this is a Hebrew baby, right? Like, it appeared from the Nile.
Well, they
like,
do.
And so...
In Tanakh, they do. In Torah, they do. She says, like, this is a Hebrew baby.
She says it to herself or to, like, her handmaids, but it's never clear, like, then, like, how does he end up growing up in the palace when, like, the Pharaoh has created this edict to, like, kill all of the firstborn Hebrews because his magicians have predicted that, like, he's going to be taken down by a Hebrew boy. And so, like, how does he not see the connection of, like, oh, here's this one that survived and he's living under my roof? Yeah, it just, like, to me, I've always, like, struggled with that piece of, like, it just doesn't fit, like, that he would be so, like, yes, this is now equal to my son, you know? But I like that they filled that in of, like, the river brought you to us and that being, like, an Egyptian god and, like, it being, like, oh, this, like, fate thing of, like, of course we were going to bring you in because you are a part of our family, whatever. So I liked that like, little drosh filled in that gap for me.
That's really nice. His mother, also a hottie with a body.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
No, everybody in this movie is, like, a little too hot. Yeah. Like, Ramsay's
like,
is hot.
Like, why were the DreamWorks animators, like,
how they
horn dogs?
Right. Yeah. How they make all of these people so hot.
Also, the funny, like, the bit of internet lore that's come, like, to the forefront of culture recently in, like, the past few years is how this movie and Shrek were getting made at the same time. And when animators would mess up on Prince of Egypt,
they were
like, punished by getting sent to work on Shrek. But yeah, I think also what's really, like, what it adds an element for me by giving Moshe parents who, when he runs away from Egypt and returns, like, everything's changed, right? Like, again, like, by adding, like, just that big family dimension to it, like, he comes back, like, his parents are dead. Like, they're not there anymore. Like, he's, like, you really see him abandoning and, like, how much he's abandoned by leaving Egypt at that time.
For sure.
And returning a different person.
Well, and you see, yeah, like, at the very end of the movie when he's like, goodbye, brother. And, like, that little interplay also.
And then it's just Ramses being like, Moses!
Yeah.
Moses! He screams like that the whole time. Steve Martin and Martin Short are in this movie, and they play the two priests of Egypt, and they crack me up. The bit where, with, like, the...
You're playing with the big boys now.
Not even that, with the water balloon full of punch, and, like, he frames... Like, at the very beginning, like, he frames Ramses, and they're like, Ramses! I'm gonna tell your father about this! Oh, no! Like, it's so funny.
It's also crazy how much foreshadowing they do of the plagues in those scenes. Mm-hmm. The red liquid, and then he says, like, him being... Like, they say something about darkness. They say something about, like, there's something that foreshadows, like, the killing of the firstborn. There's, like, so many pieces where I'm like, it's really nicely done.
Also, the scene with Tsipora where, like, they brought her in as, like, this exotic woman. And then he has his mother's disapproving glare.
Yeah.
And again, like, this, like, the strength, like, the role that women play in Moshe's life. Like, you know, his mother is sort of this, like, guiding act of, like, good and bad, and then he later lets Tsipora go, who will turn out to be another.
Love that.
Also, her sister's at the well when she, like, when she sees who he is and then drops him, and then the little girl goes, and that's why Papa says she's never getting married. Yeah.
I also like that they bring her on. They're like, bring out that Midianite woman. It's like, I kind of wish they had said bring out that Cushite woman.
Oh,
that would have been a drosh.
Yeah.
Okay, we should wrap this up.
Yeah. Again, sorry that it's been so long.
Yeah, but you're welcome for this very special episode.
The bonus
episode. Princess of Egypt.
The Princess of Egypt. Hopefully, I don't know when we're recording next.
Yeah, we'll have to talk about it offline. Yeah. But you'll get more episodes from us. Don't worry.
We'll be back.
Listen, we're both busy people. We tried to pre-record episodes, which you heard some of. We didn't.
We're back in the same country for, like, another, 2 months?
Oh, my God, it's so sad.
I know. I booked my ticket home.
Shut up.
Yeah, June 29th.
Cancel it.
June 29th, I'm out of here.
Wow.
Anyway, we don't have to talk about that now. You'll get another 2 months worth of episodes, like, mamash for sure. And then after that, we are making the best promise to each other that we will continue this as best we can from other sides of the world, finding time to do it.
And then maybe go into Nah.
And then maybe go into Nah. Oh, can you imagine?
No.
Can you imagine? That's crazy.
It'd be crazy. We're both going to have Sundays again, though.
Yeah. So. Well, I was thinking we could either do Nah, like, stories from Nah, or we could do, like, like
Tommen stories,
like Agata stories. Yeah. But I think like Nach like makes more sense to go after this. We could discuss this off. Yeah. You guys don't have to listen to our plans for the future. Yeah. Leave us a fucking voicemail. One time we got one voicemail.
Rate, review, subscribe. Yeah. We have merch. Buy some merch.
Yeah, we have merch.
Oh, we're giving them too many instructions now. There's too many things to do.
There's one thing we learned from student teaching is that give like one instruction at a time.
Yeah. Go check out the merch though, because it's pretty fun. I want the cropped sweatshirt. That's what I want.
I'll show you the photo that my friend sent me that I'm going to post tonight. Yeah. Okay.
What'd they get?
She said the sweatshirt is the most comfortable sweatshirt she's ever had. Oh my God. She didn't actually say that. She just said it's so, so, so comfy. And it looks great. Okay, I'm going to turn this off and then I'll show you. Okay, bye, everyone. Bye.